Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners, part two on the Long Island serial killer case. And the connection with Amanda is brewing, but in this episode, I still have to lay more groundwork on the case so you know the full backstory. The Amanda Winkowski case and the Long Island serial killer case are a series I'm very proud of because I've done a lot of research, but full disclosure right now, I'm recording and editing this episode solo. I'm not a sound engineer, nor am I an editor, but Greg, my husband who edits the podcast, you know, like the award-winning editor of documentaries and sound design, etc. Well, he's currently on our unfinished roof trying to save the huge glue lamb beams from the 6 inches of snowfall that wasn't supposed to happen in the middle of the night last night. I mean, it was like 80 degrees 2 days ago, and then all of a sudden, randomly, 6 inches of snow that have fallen on wood that is exposed to the elements and not sealed. So he's on a roof trying to protect them. So if the sound quality is not as good as normal, please bear with me. I'm going to do my best. Frankly, it's kind of a fun adventure. And side note, I encourage you to listen to last week's episode before diving into this one. And if you want extra credit on your report card, the other episodes about Amanda Winkowski are important to listen to as well. That way you're up to speed on this investigation. So in this episode, we are going to hear the rest of the John Ray interview, attorney for the Long Island serial killer victims and Amanda Winkowski's case. We're going to hear a few more bits of Shannon Gilbert's 911 call, and then I think it's possible I'm going to release a bonus episode this week with more of the research and connections I've found for Amanda's case linking to the Long Island serial killer. Because like I said last week, Leslie, Amanda's mom, and I talk almost daily. Leslie will send me information that she's compiled over the last 14 years, and then with a fresh set of eyes, I'm attempting to connect the dots, link people and phone numbers and places, and then I'll send Leslie a screenshot of what I've found. And she usually responds with something like, "That's crazy, that's this person, I didn't know they spoke so much before her disappearance and murder, etc." So with that being said, this case is ongoing. The Long Island serial killer or group of killers has not been arrested. Amanda's case is unsolved and still remains an accidental overdose despite there being no lethal amount of drugs in her system. And she had strangulation marks around her neck and her hyoid bone was broken. That's the bone that breaks when strangled. But I digress. Let's not focus on the past, but more what we can accomplish with new evidence and the hard work of Leslie, attorney John Ray, and our true crime community. So let's get into it. We ended last week with one potential suspect, John Bitroff. We included a portion of Shannon Gilbert's 911 call and a portion of my conversation with lawyer John Ray. This episode, we'll hear, like I said, more of Shannon's heartbreaking and frantic 911 call, more of the interview with John Ray, and one other suspect who resided in Long Island. However, I still believe the pimps were involved in some way, or at least privy to what their girls were unknowingly subjected to when delivered to these Long Island residences. And I also believe that this network of gorillas, pimps, Johns, whatever you want to call them, were all connected. They were involved in high levels of society and were trafficking girls from New York to California and beyond. And I believe they profited. They got their sadistic kicks off. And they are all responsible for ending, whether physically or by proxy, handing these girls over to people that harmed them. I believe that several persons of interest were involved in ending these beautiful girls' lives before they even got the chance to really thrive. But like I said last week, if you have any tips, if you're from that area, if your parents, cousins, anyone knows anything about this case, please email me at 7deadlysinnerspodcast@gmail.com, or you can DM me on Instagram at 7deadlysinnerspodcast. Thank you. Our next and perhaps most controversial potential suspect in the Long Island serial killer case is James Burke. So there was a bit of a party crowd in Long Island. Men who gathered to drink, share their love of sex workers, and perhaps chillingly more. James Burke, appointed sheriff of Suffolk County, was not a stranger to this crowd and perhaps was among the most sinister fellas to partake in the extracurricular activities. And allegedly, one of his favorite pastimes was snuff films. Terrifying. An admitted heroin addict, Chris Loeb, was on the hunt one night for a place to steal, something to sell, or drugs to come across when he came across something far more chilling. He had a tip that a cop was stealing drugs from the evidence room. What he didn't know was that that wasn't just a cop. It was one Jimmy Burke. Or that's at least how he tells the story. The details of how he found James Burke's house are secondary, though, to what was found. When Chris robbed Burke's truck, he indeed found narcotics. But along with that, while stuffing things into a duffel bag that he had grabbed from Burke's truck, he got a lot more than he bargained for, and not in a good way. When he got home and opened the bag, there were the drugs, of course, but there were then also 4 DVDs of porn. You know, the standard cornucopia of porn stereotypes, but then there was one that was unmarked. And when Chris Loeb put that DVD in, just out of curiosity, he stumbled upon a homemade video of a woman being tortured on camera. A snuff film. Now, if James Burke was a fellow associate of Joseph Brewer, John Bitroff, or any of the guys partying in this crowd, or maybe just ran across some of the women killed by at least one person or a group of people, he certainly would have the backstory to make a good case for involvement. And Shannon does seem like she was set up. It seems like a group of people were involved. And I hope one day soon we will find out exactly who those people are. And just like Shannon, Amanda had a similar encounter when she was trafficked to California, where she was so desperately scared she wasn't even able to make sense. I mean, what would you do? Well, let's hear more from Shannon Gilbert.
Hello.
You're being sarcastic about this. You were part of this all along.
I just met him just now.
When I review these 911 calls, one thing I get the vibe on is that it seems like, yes, it could seem like she might be a little messed up, but it could just be straight out of fear. But it kind of seems like she called 911 when Joseph Brewer or her driver, Michael Pack, couldn't hear her. And then she's just leaving the phone on, hoping that the 911 dispatchers trace her call. And she actually asks that. But it does seem like Michael Pack and Brewer don't necessarily know that she's on the phone. It seems like she called and then maybe put it in her pocket or something, hoping that someone comes to save her. I don't know. That's just my take on it. Let me know what you think. But it does kind of seem like they don't know that she's on the call with authorities, because I don't think that they would be saying what they're saying. And it does seem like she is also trying to let the 911 operator know that she is in danger. Like, why are you going to kill me? Like, she's saying things not as conversationally as you would, if that makes sense. Just take a listen and let me know what you think.
Please.
Please come
to me. No, please.
Come here.
No.
Please.
No, stop it. Please. Stop it, please, stop it.
Okay, she's obviously not gaslighting them, but this is an easy way to describe it. It seems like she is trying to say, because something scary happened to her, and I believe, well, obviously it did, because she was murdered. But it does seem like she's trying to let the 911 operator know by talking to them in a way like, why are you trying to kill me? Are you trying to kill me? It seems like she's... I mean, gaslighting is the wrong word, but she's trying to let the 911 operator know without tipping Joseph Brewer or whoever was in that house off that she was on the phone, just to be like, I'm in danger, I'm in danger, I'm in danger. Why are you trying to do this to me? Why are you trying to do this to me? I don't know. That's my perspective.
Shannon. Shannon.
Shannon's story is very different than what was portrayed so far.
I then go on to ask John what he thinks about Michael Pack and why, if he was her longtime driver and supposed friend, why he's not coming forward to help in Shannon's case, and how is it possible he didn't see anything? How is he just an innocent bystander when this girl is clearly in distress? She doesn't want to be inside the house with these men, and she's afraid to go outside. But she's probably thinking if she runs, maybe someone will help her. Here's John Ray's take on Michael Pack.
Michael Pack has, I've taken his testimony several times, and I've also interviewed him separately. And Michael Pack is not telling the truth about what happened that night.
Oh, really?
I can prove it. With the documentary evidence we have.
Okay.
So Michael Pack does not walk away from this scot-free.
Adam Patterson did the same thing, John. He leaves Amanda, leaves her. And 5 days before, she's telling me they're going to kill her. I don't know who, but they're going to kill her.
Right.
And Chris Loeb. John Ray and I go on to discuss Chris Loeb, the young man who went searching for the cop who stole drugs from the evidence room. He thought he was just a regular old cop. Well, he ended up robbing Suffolk County Police Chief Jimmy Burke.
Alexis Linkletter grew up in Smithtown, Long Island, and along with Christopher Loeb, who was a wrestler in high school, in her high school. That's how she knew him. So that was an interesting coincidence, since she's also a filmmaker and a documentary filmmaker, I think. And she's also the granddaughter of the more famous, you know, Art Linkletter, who was very famous in the 50s and 60s as a television personality who would interview children and wrote books about them.
John Ray then goes on to shock me with more disturbing news. I had always read and heard that what was found in Jimmy Burke's bag was a snuff film. But John says there was also child sex abuse material. I'm shocked.
Christopher got himself into heroin, and he is the reason why, one reason why the serial killer issue has been brought and placed before Chief Burke's door, as it were, because it was Loeb who Chief Burke beat up badly at a police station in Hauppauge, Long Island, when Loeb broke into Burke's vehicle and in the night stole a bag out of the a police bag out of the trunk of the vehicle and claimed that in the bag there was child porn. Now, nobody's ever said it was a snuff film. I think Christopher has...
They say it on the podcast.
Yeah, well, for years, nobody ever said it was a snuff film. Only recently did Christopher begin to say it was a snuff film. So, but nobody ever said that back in the day when all this happened.
Do you find him credible? And do you believe that?
Christopher's a nice fellow. I've met him many times. He's been here to my office. You know, he's a good guy in many respects. Just that's gone wayward with his drugs. And hopefully he's got his act together now. But that's how Burke ends up in the story. And, you know, he's arrogant, and he decides that he's going to punish this kid when a kid gets caught, I think, right away, and beats the hell out of him in the police station. That's what triggered this. That's how he ended up getting indicted. And that's how he brought down his buddy, District Attorney Thomas Spoda, and Thomas Spoda's staff, Chris McPartland, because of the cover-up of the beating that he administered to Loeb. Yeah, well, it wasn't even originally child porn. It was porn. And then it emerged that it was child porn soon after, and then years later it's now being said that it was a snuff film.
Well, what do you believe?
It's hard to know. I mean... There's all, you know, I try to keep my mind, as you can tell, hopefully, on the evidence. And, you know, what does the evidence tell us? It's like Sherlock Holmes said, evidence, evidence, always evidence. And so I try not to make too much out of what I believe, if you know what I mean. I'd rather know what the facts are before I form a final belief. And I don't know all the facts yet to do that. Just that right now, there's very scant evidence that there was a snuff film involved. And from the very beginning of my investigation in this case, when I was first invited into the case by Mary Gilbert, Shannon's mother, many years ago in 2011, I was told by a person who was friendly, close with her, and we met all together for the invitation for me to come in. And I was told then that it involved a snuff film. So right from the very earliest stage of the case, somebody was saying it was a snuff film. Not in Christopher Loeb's bag, or I mean Burke's bag that he took, but rather that, you know, Shannon Gilbert was involved in the making of a snuff film, and that's why she's dead. I don't know if I mean, there's no evidence of that I have, and it's just people saying it.
Leslie and I go on to make a comparison to the way Amanda was terrified before she died. For weeks, she seemed scared, and she also seemed to think that something terrible was going to happen to her when she was trafficked to California, a place Shannon was also sent.
I don't know. I just believe they're very much connected, and I'd like to figure out. I think the California thing might be the next step. If Kiki could just tell me which town, because then I can look and see if those guys had been associated with the town, like Tank or Kez or, you know, Joaquin, Justice, all their stupid names.
Well, so if we associate, if Amanda and Shannon Gilbert are in California, then they're probably the bottom bitch, right? Is that what we're all thinking? Maybe?
Possible, yeah. Sounds like a reasonable possibility, sure.
That's what yeah. So they're the bottom bitch. They have the cushion job, per se, because they're being put in rooms. They're not on the street corner. Something is terrifying every one of them.
Leslie then speculates on the status of many of these girls, including Amanda. And she's been told, and so have I, by our source TT, who was essentially Amanda's mentor in California, and who is trying to help Leslie solve Amanda's case now that she is out of that terrible world. And she is an angel of a person, and extremely smart, and has been a huge asset. But through TT, we learned the terminology and rank system of the girls in this world. Here's Leslie.
Okay. Well, I was also telling John today that Amanda had to send home $2,000 home a night. That is so much money. For well, $2,000 in 2008 a night. They were abusing her so bad. And I'm thinking she just was petrified. She didn't. And Amanda has no record, no police record, no nothing. The only stuff, there is nothing on record. So they can say she was an addict, she was a prostitute, she was this bad, bad person. She wasn't.
She had no drugs in her system.
She had no drugs in her system.
Wow.
And you know, we have five, not only do we have her exhumed, but I have the New York State Police telling me, honey, that monster murdered her. I'm telling you, whatever happened in California, whatever, it came back to Buffalo, Jersey, Tank's involved in the whole thing.
Jersey comes up, too, when I've done the background reports on, like, Antoine and stuff. I need to just run a few more of them.
I just ask you to try what you can to connect Buffalo, the practice there, you know, the particulars with Amanda, Shannon,
okay,
and Melissa, and possibly TT, to make a connection as best you can with all of those. That would be fantastic. The rest of it,
okay.
I could speak for easily 10 hours nonstop about all the facts in the case, but we just don't have that time.
I will have more for you on this very soon, perhaps even tomorrow. Who knows? But I love you guys so much, and thank you so much for listening, staying with me on this journey. I'm really passionate about this. I won't make it 9 episodes like I did the Franklin scandal, although I might. I lied. I probably will. But more to come. I will make it more diverse. There will be another episode that's totally different next week. We'll come back to Amanda and the Long Island serial killer case very soon, but expect a little bit of a change up next week. We got some, it's actually a pretty scary case next week. And then I go on a comedy tour, by the way. And if you are in the cities of Chicago, Kansas City, Lawrence, Kansas, Dodge City, or Trinidad, Colorado, or La Junta, Colorado, I will be making stops there from April 28th through May 6th. You can find tickets at chiefcomedyfestival.com. And I'm going to do a Wild West case during that, because Dodge City fascinates me. So anyways, guys, I love you so much. Thank you for listening. I hope I see you at one of those shows. And I'll see you later.